I'm of a sandwich generation where I've got my mom, who's 83, and I've got two kids who are running around this house right now, who are preteen or teens. And the voice assistants were the entry point into technology for both of them. It was the first human-computer interaction that, at the time, my five-year-old was able to perform, where he heard mom or dad shout at the smart speaker to do things, turn on the projector so he could watch TV, and he would learn those patterns and then do them by himself. And that was a, you know, kind of an eye-opening, like, think, oh, that's your first computer, is this little glowing puck. And the same thing was true with my mom. As her eyes grow dim and her fingers are less steady, she's able to, again, approach basic control of technology in her home by using her voice, which is still very much in place.
Welcome to the AI Marketing Navigator, where we simplify AI marketing to keep you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by Digital Pop, delivering AI marketing automation so your small business thrives. Here's your host, Alex Carlson.
Fascinating. And have you, to continue down my own little rabbit hole here, have you had the opportunity to work in any augmented reality or virtual reality design? And if so, how challenging is that compared to traditional design? Is that, do you think that is the future of visual human computer interaction?
No, I missed out on the AR wave. That headset and goggle never appealed to me. I much more thought that the voice interface was a better approach. I'm of a sandwich generation where I've got my mom, who's 83, and I've got two kids who are running around this house right now, who are preteen or teens. And the voice assistants were the entry point into technology for both of them. It was the first human-computer interaction that, at the time, my five-year-old was able to perform, where he heard mom or dad shout at the smart speaker to do things, turn on the projector so he could watch TV. And he would learn those patterns and then do them by himself. And that was a, you know, kind of an eye-opening, like, think, oh, that's your first computer, is this little glowing puck. And the same thing was true with my mom. As her eyes grow dim and her fingers are less steady, she's able to, again, approach basic control of technology in her home by using her voice, which is still very much in place. And so I found that as we pontificate about what's going to come out of OpenAI's next hardware initiative, that I thought that the voice, introduction of voice was much better than anything that we would strap to our face. But maybe that's because I'm still gun shy about Google Glass and Oculus and all of those sort of strap-on technologies.
Sure, sure. That is such a good point. Fascinating that the first computer interaction for your children was a voice one. And that's just what is going to be expected throughout their development through technology. You know, I downloaded a tool that's a dictation tool called Whisper, and I use it more and more frequently, and their mission was to kill the keyboard, and I think they might very much be succeeding along with this wave of vocal technology. The physical human-computer interaction is going to be so, so much less. Let's, as you mentioned, pontificating, I love to do it despite my lack of expertise in some of the areas. Maybe we can take a pivot to an area where we're both learning. I know we mentioned and we discussed you have started working recently in the world of UBI and universal basic income for one of the projects that you're doing as far as data visualization goes. Can you share any of your early learnings about UBI, about the philosophy, about, if you don't mind, giving us your own personal insight into what you think about UBI, and I'll try and do the same.
Yeah, this might bore some of the listeners that are more concerned with this from a social justice standpoint. It is an exercise in going from zero to being able to talk at a party about it, or a podcast, depending upon how you define a party. It was a philanthropist here in town, whom I know very well, that is spinning up a platform to donate half of his family's wealth to universal basic income initiatives, or I think guaranteed minimum income is an accurate descriptor. And because of my consultancy's work in data visualization, he wants to use charts and graphs to help stand up the importance of UBI initiatives. And the only problem is I know nothing about UBI. and so in a bygone era, what I would do is I would go to the academic library, print out a bunch of papers and take a highlighter and just try to go through it as fast as I could. In a more modern era, I would go scour the web or Google Scholar and then download things to a hard drive or a folder and go through them one by one. And now for this project, given that the age that we're in, we're creating a service for retrieval augmented retrieval mm-hmm. automated generation, where we're able to populate a knowledge graph and take these 200 articles and then put them into a model that we created, maintain ourselves, and begin Amazing. To ask questions of it so that when we want to show statistics, we're able to return them with a confidence and faith that the references and that the transparency of the answer it provides us are traceable. Because it's not an era, or it's not an area in which you want to be spouting things that don't exist or hallucinating on your results. And so we're training this RAG to talk in the manner of this philanthropist, to return results with academic level references of when you make this citation, it's this article by this author, and to Amazing. Be transparent in how it's starting to assemble different thoughts. And from there, I can start to pull the important facts and figures out and go into data visualization. But, you know, a fancy chart and graph is nothing if you don't have some narrative behind it. And that's where this RAG will come in, is that I can begin to have a paragraph or two to accompany the chart and graph to then, again, help the philanthropist communicate out the importance of his efforts. So from an exercise of, again, Alex, you have many clients, you've worked in agencies enough to know that you're like a improv comedian every couple months where you've got a yep. new thing you got to know something about. And that's this muscle memory, I'll use the phrase again, of yep. this is going to happen in another couple months, and it's not going to be UBI, it's going to be banking, or it's going to be powdered milk. It's going to be something where there's a process of which we need to train a thing, a model, to know about this, to know the pros and the cons, and to aggregate enough variety of sources that you can give us a well-rounded opinion on it, and then to begin to ask it for the started direction. And that will get you into the party and understand the conversation that's happening around you. And in our case, the statistics and the tables that can lead to good displays.
So amazing there. If you don't know about something, you can now build yourself a teacher. And that's I think there's never been a better time to learn and to educate yourself. And like you said, whether it's UBI or whatever it's going to be in the future, the speed at which we can do so is fascinating to me. I'm going to push you a little further on your own personal feelings around the future of work. The idea that we live in a social utopia where work is no longer necessary and AI enables that. Do you see that in your lifetime? Do you see work going away? Is that a world in which you think you could live in? You have a very illustrious professional career in both academia and otherwise. Is there a world in which no work is okay with you?
No. Yeah, I'm looking over my shoulder here for those of you watching from home. off camera is a pile of laundry, of which I will be getting to later this afternoon, possibly this evening. And so there is a connection between mind and body that will always need to take place. I've told my son, my 13-year-old, that I'm proud of him because he got his first job of going back and entering the workforce. And he is a paid dungeon master at a neighborhood school around the corner.
Amazing.
And I pointed out that you're being paid to think with your mind. you're not being paid to sell lemonade or throw newspapers or walk dogs. You're being paid to sit and understand what's going on at the table, the strengths and the weaknesses of each individual or character, and illustrate this story, to tell a story to a captive group of five kids. And that is a good line of work to be in. And that is a really important thing to recognize, your ability to execute and not get in your way, and to conduct yourself professionally and come in prepared, and to adapt and acknowledge the situation around you. Because the future of work, you want to be in that side. I had a friend tell me, I'm not sure if he paraphrased or stole this quote, but he said this about 10 years ago, and it's stuck with me ever since, was either you're going to pick a career in which you tell the computers what to do, or you're going to pick a career in which the computers tell you what to do. And that's always like, again, kept me up at night of like, oh boy, I want to stay ahead of this. And I want to make sure I understand it enough where I can be on the right side of that equation. So I think, not to paint a dystopia too much about the fortune which you and I have, is some autonomy and some levity about what's happening within the industry. I think that there are just as many of those who are on the other side of it. And as mentioned with the County of San Mateo story, and that the efforts that they take to make sure that we're not doing away with jobs, but we're instead trying to interpret what kind of new jobs are opening up as a result of this. I think that's an important distinction to make. Is that we're all going to play a part in this one way or the other.
Absolutely. Well, I thank you for getting out of the design world with us there a little bit and talking about AI future and philosophy. I really appreciate it. Before we wrap up here today, one thing I always ask our guests to finish the show, if there's one thing you could have our listeners take away today from our conversation, whether design related, whether future of work related, or the future of both, what would that one thing be, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's the comfort with being uncomfortable. And we find ourselves, you know, that adage of when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. I think that we're looking down at our right hands and thinking, I don't know if this hammer is going to work anymore, because now there's these other tools. And so that is an uncomfortable situation. But like, you know, you've been trained for this. That's why you went to school. That's why you switched jobs. That's why you learned a new skill. And so that kind of assessment of, okay, the tools are changing around me. I need to figure out what's my next hammer, or what's my next process, or how do I adapt my skills, irrespective of what tool is in my right hand, and apply myself in that manner. And that's... you know, again, that can be scary, but it can also be comforting because it's something you've done before. And that's my one takeaway, especially those of you who are coming into the career, into the profession. You know, they say that instead of being pyramid shaped, the workforce is now going to be diamond shaped, where there'll be the very few at the top and the very few at the bottom and everybody else in the middle. And I know if you're coming out of school, especially in a economic condition in which is a bit unstable, that that can be intimidating. But you know, there's a reason that you put yourself through that cycle. And instead of having to climb up a corporate ladder anymore, you've been given this jetpack where you can go right to the top, and you can do and build at a velocity that has never been seen before. Just as we saw in the early 2000s with the dream weavers and the visual-based web design tools, where anybody could have a website and a business that was behind that website. We talked more about how to train LLMs to find you or to know you. Those kinds of empowering thoughts are much healthier than, oh shit, I'm going to get downsized.
I love that so much. Be comfortable with the uncomfortable, and you know, you didn't get too dystopian at all there. I love the optimism around. We've never had quite the set of tools that we have now to combat that discomfort. So anyway, Nick, I can't thank you enough for your time today. This was one of our best conversations for AI and the future of. And so thank you so much for being with us. And hopefully someday in the future, we can maybe have you on again and we can see just where things have gotten in a couple years.
Anytime, Alex. Great to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to the AI Marketing Navigator. Ready to simplify your own marketing automation? DigitalPOP helps make it happen so your small business can scale your marketing fast. Learn more at thedigitalpop.com.